Welcome to the show. We'd like you all to know we're very, very thankful that you're here. We can leave you feeling numb, but now the week is almost done. So open up those big old hearts and open up your ears, 'cause there's a special delivery. Special delivery for all you special freaks and norms and nerds. Oh, there's a special delivery. Special delivery. Stuff that you'll be happy that you heard.
Cool. Packed house tonight.
Okay, I'm going to get right to it.
This is the month of October. This is the month that contains Jewish holidays. And last week was Yom Kippur. Wishing everybody a belated, mournful Yom Kippur. This is a song by one of my fave Jewish songwriters, Kinky Friedman.
Just a ragged kid in overalls, thumb to ride one day. He told me anywhere you're going is on the way. But when we passed by Big Al's driving, his eyes began to flash. We were leaving Rapid City mighty fast. And he said, I hope that God she finds a goodbye letter that I wrote her. But the mail don't move so fast in Rapid City, South Dakota. Well, he left her just a blanket of snow upon the farm. And that don't leave your conscience very warm. He said his friends were too damn country, and his dad was too damn mean, and there wasn't money in pumping gasoline. General eyes, merchandise, and dreams he made have sold her. But he left her there alone in Rapid City, South Dakota. Well, the reason he was gone, not sure I can say. Might have been the rodeo in Santa Fe. Well, there's a doctor in Chicago, I hope she'll be alright, he told himself as we drove on through the night. And I hope to God she finds a goodbye letter that I wrote her. But the mail don't move so fast in Rapid City, South Dakota. And all her people treating her just like they never knowed her. The mail don't move so fast in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Thank you. Kinky Friedman and his Texas Jew Boys is the name of his band.
Okay.
This song I've had stuck in my head for a long time. Originally performed by Roberta Flack, then repopularized by the great Lauryn Hill.
Strumming my pain with his finger, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song, killing me softly with his song, telling my whole life with his words, killing me softly with his song. I heard he sang a good song, I heard he had a style, and so I went to see him and listened for a while. And there he was, this young boy, a stranger to my eyes, strumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song, killing me softly with his song, telling my whole life with his words, killing me softly with his song. I felt all flushed with fever, embarrassed by the crowd. Felt he took my letters and read each one out loud. But he just kept on singing, kept right on singing, strumming my pain with his finger, singing my life with his words, killing me softly with his song, killing me softly with his song, telling my whole life his words, killing me softly with his song.
Waylon Jennings, World Surprise. How's the sound?
So good?
Good. Cool.
Sing those songs so blue to help me remember.
Thanks. I'll do one more song. I played at a wedding. So that's the last time too. Played at my friend's wedding. My friends Alex and Rita. What's that? 2, 3 I don't know. Several weeks ago, I learned a bunch of songs for the wedding. That I'm still sort of dining out on. Or I'm not dining out on them. Nobody's paying me. But I'm out of the house, so that's good. Dining out. Okay.
This is Jordan. So, I was real sick when we recorded this episode, and maybe I don't remember most, if not all of it. Luckily, very luckily, my interview came out great, and all the music was great. However, the intro, where me and Doug talk up top, is it's pretty rough, guys. It's I'm not going to lie, it's pretty rough. I am babbling incoherently, and not like normal person babbling incoherently, but for me, I make no sense in this. So, doing a pre-record intro. I hope the tone of this isn't too weird. Show's real good. Guests are Dark Tea. They have a really great self-titled album out. Came out this past March on Fire Talk Records. You should really check it out. And I interview Rick Leishtung of Ad Hoc. Ad Hoc's like a publication and a promotions company based in New York. And Rick started off booking DIY shows and then ran a DIY venue. And now he books above board, not shady at all, actual legit shows on a pretty big scale in New York. And he's doing it at a time where it's really hard to find an independent promoter in this city. Most shows are booked by in-house talent buyers. A lot of venues are owned by AEG or Live Nation, which are companies that promote soccer games and don't necessarily have a huge stated interest in club shows that 500 people go to. So Rick's really run the gamut on all the different types of promotion you can do in New York, and he does it in a way that is actually competitive with people that have offices in London and Rome, I'm guessing. Yeah, so don't know how to transition out of these, never done this before. Also, don't know if I know how to fade in and out of tracks on GarageBand. If you hear a fade in the middle of my conversation with Rick, I figured it out. And if there's just some silence and the show starts again, I did not. Anyway, enjoy the show. Enjoy the show. Okay, peace. Don't like that either. Famous NYC film locations that you might recognize now, but yeah. This I noticed because I was drunk and watching Avril Lavigne music videos. She shot a music video on top of the food bazaar off the Flushing J train stop.
That's sick.
Yeah, I know. Vibe. It's great. Anyway, this isn't what I brought you here to talk about. So, Rick, for those who don't know you, you run with a few other people Ad Hoc, which is an independent promotion company in New York. But before all that, you lived at and booked Market Hotel.
Yeah.
How did you get started doing all that?
Well, I guess I was interning for Todd P, and that's kind of like how I first started off at Market Hotel. And I was kind of at like, there was a moment where I was trying to figure out where to live, and I knew that I wanted to live somewhere where I could throw shows because, that's just what I wanted to do. And I could either live at Market or I could live at this other place, Surreal Estate.
Bad place to live. You made the right choice. You made the right choice.
Not a... Yeah. Was on the right side of history for that one. But, went with Market Hotel. I think I moved in while there was this, like... I think it was, like, Black Dice was playing while I was moving in and on, like, an April evening or whatever. And it was like a horrible place to live, but an amazing place to be when you're like, you know, 20 and broke and you want to live with like 15 or 20 strangers that could be your best friends or whatever.
Why would somebody want that though? I mean, it's pretty disgusting.
Well, I mean, you know, I think it really, it kind of goes back to being just fucking broke, I think, yeah. Is one part of it, where it's like, oh, I could live somewhere in New York for, I think my rent started off as $380 for New York is pretty good.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, shit, I could, like, work door at Death by Audio and, you know, live. So that's kind of like, that was really why. It was just cheap, and then I was able to throw shows on the side, and I could play music there if I wanted to, and I don't know. It's not like I had any, like, particular direction at the time either. I was just like, oh, this works.
Do you miss living in a situation like that at all? Or do you think you got it all out of your system?
You know, there's some things that I will always miss, and then there are other things that I will never miss.
What are the things?
That I miss?
Yeah.
I do miss... I think that when you're in, like, a large co-op situation like that, you're constantly being pushed outside of your comfort zone, like, nonstop. And for me, you know, I was, like, fairly, I don't know. I wasn't, like, really social. I'm not even, like, particularly social now, to be honest with you. But, like, I was very uncomfortable and very awkward back then. And I feel like, you know, living in a place like Market Hotel where you're forced to socialize with people, like, 24 hours a day and meet people who are just sort of, like, sleeping on your couch that you don't know. But you need to talk to them because... You know, you need to, like, identify who they are, because it's a problem if there's somebody sleeping on the couch or you don't know who
they
are.
Do you think not being social is part of the reason why you wanted to book shows? Because for me, that is absolutely how I ended up booking shows and managing artists, is it creates, like, a like an infrastructure in which you know how to socialize with people. And, like, you have a very specific role, and you can also tell if you're doing a good or bad job at it.
Yeah, I mean, I think to a degree, yeah, that could have been a factor. I mean, like, I initially was drawn to it because, like, I wanted to play music, and honestly, the music I made was not very good, so nobody wanted to book me. So I had to, like, book my own shows in order to play shows, and then after a while, I kind of realized, like, oh, I'm not really good at, like, playing or, like, making music. And there was kind of, like, it was a turning point combined with, like, oh, I'm even more broke. And I, like, sold all my gear. And that was sort of, like, a turning point for me where I was, like, okay, I'm going to, like, commit to this idea of, like, booking shows and being a person that helps, because I didn't really feel like that I had an amazing artistic contribution to make, especially during that time when there were so many amazing bands around.
Do you regret that?
Not really. I mean, I don't know. I don't think it plays very well if I said no regrets on, like, not making music anymore, because I think that's, like, obscene sounding. But, like, I don't know. I'm really happy with, like, you know, the path I chose, and I fucking love doing what I do, and, like, I don't know. I feel like it's just, like, realizing what you're good at and what you're not good at. And I just, like, wasn't that hot at making music. But I loved it more than anything. So it was kind of like, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you were either lying or you have a degree of self-realization that is borderline unhealthy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think, yeah, I guess you could say that. Yeah, I don't find it to be unhealthy. I think it's good to, like, be hard on yourself and be, like, real and be like, yo, this is not working out or this sucks or whatever, because I feel like the worst thing you can do...
Is that your idea of healthy or unhealthy?
Because I think it's healthy. I think to shed...
I go back and forth.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the times that being somewhat delusional allows you to do things that you wouldn't otherwise do, and I don't know if that's a good or bad thing.
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Well, no,
we're not going to settle this now, so I'm just going to move on to the next thing I want to talk about. Market Hotel closed. It's now reopened, but when you were living there, it closed, and
yeah,
you moved a lot of your shows to 285 Kent, which is now also closed.
Yep.
And that version of Market Hotel and 285 Kent have been closed for a long enough period of time where I feel comfortable in saying that they were illegal. Yeah, illegal.
Potentially.
Eventually, they got shut down by the city. In one case, directly. In another case, indirectly. And when 285 Kent closed, you decided to keep booking shows. Most shows, most, like, live events in the city, are promoted by two companies. There's AEG and there's Live Nation. And for rooms that are over 1,000 people, it's very rare that an event in a room that size is promoted by not one of those two companies. You were one of a handful of people that will operate in rooms that size. Why didn't you just stop booking shows when 285 Kent closed?
I didn't really feel like I had a lot of options. I mean, I think that's kind of like a weird motif that's, you know, I feel weird about talking about it, to be honest with you, to be like, oh, I didn't really, you know, there's nothing else. But, like, really, it was just like, oh, well.
Wait, you know, when you say weird motif, what do you mean?
I mean, I guess, like, relating back to before and talking about, like, oh, you know, I felt like being a musician wasn't a real option for me because I didn't really love what I did. And, like, not having many options but being obsessed with, you know, being a part of music kind of led me to booking shows. And I feel like staying in it also is, like, another thing because, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. It's like I, for years, were just, like, I was so desperate to, like, participate and be involved in the scene. I guess the hard thing is really just figuring out a way for it to be, like, financially sustainable because the system is broken and it's not sustainable. So at that point, if you don't, you know, start your own thing and be independent and work against it, then you're at the mercy of industry, corporate, or, like, indies who strive to be that, and you just wish that they hire you. And, you know, it's like, I don't know, nobody would fucking hire me. Like, so, you know what I mean? So I'd, like, literally be like, okay, I guess, like, if nobody's gonna hire me to do anything, I just have to fucking do it.
Or you could get another job.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, for sure. I tried that, too, and I just wasn't very good at other jobs. I'm, like, the worst bartender you'll ever meet, ever.
Same. Yeah.
I really only had, like, show-adjacent jobs, like being a pretend security guard or being a sound engineer.
I've been a pretend sound engineer.
Which I...
It's gone horribly.
I am not a very good sound engineer.
When you do 285 Kent, running a venue and being an independent promoter are very different things, only because when you run a venue, you make your money on the bar. When you are a promoter, you don't really see a lot of the bar, if any. How does a promoter make money?
Yeah, that's a good question. I guess if they're not in-house at any particular venue, the only avenues could be door profits, which are usually, like, on a smaller scale. Like, if you get them, 10% after expenses, maybe up to 20%. And especially when you're starting out, it's like you're kind of cutting up, like, a lot of the time you're sort of, like, distributing $300 or, like, $400. And then, you know, if you make money, you might make, like, $10, and then usually you just give it to the out of town band because they deserved it and
so
played their ass off. And
on a door commission now, how much does Ad Hoc make from, like, an average show?
It's honestly, like, all over the map because we're sort of in a place where we're growing to at a rate that we could be competitive with larger promoters down the line, but we're still, like, small and indie and, you know, like, a $1,000 loss or a $2,000 loss is something that a lot of promoters, either the major ones or indies who have, like, substantial financial backing, are just like, okay, that's chill. $1,000, $2,000.
Oh, okay, let me rephrase this question. What's it take for you to lose $1,000 and what's it take for you to make $1,000?
Yeah. So, it's very easy to lose $1,000. And it's
how?
Very hard.
How does it happen?
It happens in a few ways. I think the main way is, like, it's really in the pursuit of growth a lot of the time. And, you agree to things that, you know, maybe things don't pan out like you thought they would. You know, giving offers to agents and then having to be competitive with fish that are way larger than you that can, they can really just overbid you whenever they feel like it. It's not like it's not like a big deal to them to lose a few grand here and there or whatever. If they just want something, then they can, you know, they can buy it. And, you know, I get that. but
do you ever like take a show that you know is going to be a loss?
Yeah.
Why?
Because we want to do it. Because I want to do it. Because that's like part of it is also like, you know, I still haven't really like, I like to think that I think about things really, really hard and make sure that like offers we send out are sustainable and that like the company can be sustainable and all this other shit. You're just giving me a thumbs down right now.
Yeah.
But
fuck that.
No, but at the other, on the other side of it, you're like, you know, the people who are like dedicated enough and crazy enough to just like work a million hours, to be in music and make like pennies or whatever. They're just like stupid enough to be like, oh yeah, like it's worth it to me for me to lose money on this like show that I love or this artist that I've been dying to have or like.
Can you tell me
like attached to
what is something you've lost a lot of money on that you knew you were going to do it and don't regret it? Like, what's like the big scary water slide of booking shows and losing money?
I'm trying to think. I don't know. I'm hard pressed for like things that I think one of the first like big losses that I took was I was just really into all of these like horror movie soundtracks about a decade ago, and I was like, oh, you know what would be sick if we like flew in Alan Horth, who like actually wrote the Halloween theme, not John Carpenter. That's some bullshit. And I was like, oh, this would be sick. Gonna like get him out here from wherever he lives, which is not close, and he's gonna play it, and everybody's gonna freak out, and like I don't know. It was just like something that I thought would be like so tremendously sick, but like lost such an insane amount of money on, and like nobody really cared or went to the show. It was like, it was pretty brutal at that time. But now I feel a little more thick-skinned, and I feel like losses like that felt really big at the time, are now sort of like fairly routine in a weird way, just because we've also grown and we also do win now on shows, and like it's not all, you know, throwing.
What work do you put into a show that you win at? Like, is that just winning the bid for a show that's going to do anyway, like good anyway, or is that like, where do you make the difference in
yeah,
whether
on
or not
the promoter
a show
side
does,
or in getting a show?
No, in making a like a show do well versus doing poorly. Like, is it just like, is it predetermined? Like, if a band's on tour and you get their New York show, if it's like Big Thief, are they going to bring the same amount of people no matter what you do?
To some, I don't want to devalue what I do, but at the same time, no. But
no, I mean,
the
there's,
deal.
There's
any,
some shows
any,
where
any promoter who's saying like, "Oh, I'm going to get all these people," blah blah blah. Like, yeah, that's true. Actually, they do like hustle and do a lot of work, but at the same time, like people are there for the artist, and it's about the artist.
Yeah,
whether you like it. You know, whether you like it or not, I'd love to say that it's just like, oh, we promote a show and then 100,000 people come, but that's just not how it goes. Ultimately, it's really about understanding the artist's draw in the market, how to reach people in the best way. And also, like, a big part of it, frankly, is like engaging the artists that are on the bill to actively promote it. I feel like a lot of the work that we do is actually sort of like, in an odd way, can be like educational with a lot of artists, because I think a lot of artists are like, oh, we just want to play or whatever. This is just like, we make music and that's what we do. And there's a lot of artists that don't really think about the like business side of it at all. And that's, you know, they shouldn't have to. But at the same time, it's still important if they want to make a living, you know, and get by and all the other shit. And you know, yeah, a lot of it is like talking with artists and be like, hey, can you do like this and this thing to help the show? Can you give us access to your Facebook to let us put ads in it? Bunch of stuff like that. So I don't know. I think that's like what a lot of really good promoters do, actually, is that they work hands on with the artist to try and make the show good. Yeah.
one of the big booking agencies is Endeavor.
William Morris?
Yeah.
WME, yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things that's been really interesting about the live event sphere is both the promotions, like AEG Live Nation, have been buying smaller and smaller rooms. So across multiple cities, all these events are vertically integrating, where the same promoters have small size rooms, mid size rooms, large size rooms, and they can kind of funnel bands up through their career. And as that's been happening, booking agencies have been consolidating. Like the big ones have been buying the middle sized ones, and the smaller sized ones have been closing. And pretty recently, one of the big booking agencies announced that they were going to go public with an IPO and then didn't at the very last minute because it was significantly cheaper than they thought it was going to be. What's the consequence of this happening on like a person going to a show?
I think the consequences of larger promoters looking at smaller venues is really that a lot of the thing that makes a night out special is just like something unique. And I think that when you're hitting the level of like volume that some of these larger promoters have, it's just so difficult to make something unique. And it's very much like sort of just trying to get something off your desk so you can work on the next thing if you're like a large, big promoter.
How do you make something unique for 1,000 people?
I think putting it at a different venue is like a very bare minimum thing that you could do. 1,000 people in New York is still like a very difficult... it's still like there's not a lot of venues that you can just like waltz into. And the other part of it is that artists that can draw up to 1,000 people, you know, they're not maybe up for the scrappy DIY experience. And then, but then you could give them like a very completely legal experience with an amazing PA and a lot of really great things. But then it costs a lot of money because the rentals are high and you have to bring outside production to the point where they're only making like a third of what they would make just playing, you know, the places that are everywhere and always play shows. And really it's the convenience of those like tried and true venues that, I don't know, kind of make the experience of going out a little less special, to some degree, which is part of the reason why we don't really like align with any particular brick and mortar in New York City. Also just cause like, I don't know, I feel like people like to go out to multiple things in a night. And I also just don't know. I don't want to be like, I don't know. Like I would be bummed if I booked an amazing show tonight and then an amazing show tomorrow, but then people wouldn't want to go to the show tomorrow because they're going to the same place already tonight. I don't know.
How does this vertical integration affect artists?
Well, I think that it...
Is it better for them?
I guess it just depends on what their goals are, what they want to do with themselves. Do they want to be a big band? Do they want to play Coachella or something? Like, that's a big thing in LA. Like, if you want to play Coachella, you have to play Golden Voice Room. You have to play...
Golden Voice is owned by AEG, who owns Coachella.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so it's like it's an unspoken thing, or maybe more of a directly spoken thing, like behind closed doors or in an email, that if you don't sell out the Fonda in LA, then you're probably not going to get a Coachella offer. And the other part of it is that like the deals at the Fonda are like not leaning towards the artist at all. So it's just like almost another way for the larger company to recoup. And there are some practices that can feel, accidentally predatory at times, inadvertently predatory towards artists and their growth and what they could possibly walk out with. And I don't really think that's,
like what?
Well, I mean, well, really just what I described, basically, that like, you know, you gotta play in LA, you got to play with Golden Voice or you're not going to get the Coachella offer.
So do bands make less money because of systems like that? Because you could also make the argument that bands on the smaller end are making more money because if they have a booking agent, their booking agent's part of an agency that has even larger agents. And if you're somebody who brings 100 to 150 people to a show, you might get overpaid because the talent buyer wants to keep your agent happy because they have somebody who will draw 3,000 people like a month from now. Could this theoretically maybe help artists?
It can. But at the same time, I think when an agent on an artist's behalf is a little overzealous about what the band is capable of pulling, what happens then is, you know, the promoter, whether they're large or small, is basically like they've committed to whatever they said that they've given, and they have to give it no matter what. But the difference is that the promoter who lost the money is going to remember, oh, this band that, like, you know, we guaranteed $5,000 for, but then brought in two, like, not going to keep them in mind for another thing later, or we'll put them in a smaller venue or not prioritize them. So it's really like, it's actually like it shouldn't be an adversarial relationship between promoters and agents or anything. It should be a trusting, symbiotic relationship that feeds both parties equally, because then otherwise it's just you have promoters who don't want to commit the money, and then it's kind of like a big old mess.
How do people break into this system? Like, if there's fewer small promoters and fewer small agents, how do you, like, get at the table?
How does a band break through? I don't know. I mean, honestly, there's so many different strategies that you could use. It's kind of just like, I think the easiest way for a band to get attention is really, like, if they're not established at all, playing, like, every single fucking show. Every show that they get, just playing it.
And are there fewer shows now?
I think there's a lot of shows. I would say that it feels like there's less interesting shows happening in New York City, and there's less interesting, engaging spaces to see those shows. And there are less spaces that are not controlled internally by a larger promoter who has to prioritize financial gain over, you know, curatorial, I don't know, over what they think is good. I think that's a very real thing, to where, like, the people who are booking the bands are like, you know, they can't afford to lose money on anything, so then they go with things that are safe. And then the things that are safe are usually really not that interesting. And then it just kind of contributes to this larger issue of, you know, homogenic bullshit, non-interesting.
Man, I gotta tell you, it's a huge bummer.
Oh, come on.
It's a huge bummer.
Yeah. I'm sure, I know you seem broken up about it.
I mean, I am, but
Jordan also has a huge smile on his face right now, by the way.
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? Listening in. I mean, the thing is, it is a huge bummer. It's the thing I am most stressed about. And I don't necessarily know if it's going to get better.
Yeah, it might not. I don't know. Yeah, it's going to get especially... It's weird, because it's like, there's some things that are like, there's like flashes of things where you say like, oh, actually that really like levels the playing field, or like it democratizes things, like, you know, Spotify being like,
I do not think so, but
there are some democratic elements of it where it's like, yeah, if a band is good and it gets popular on Spotify through like word of mouth, it's a real fucking thing. But then at the same time, there's still all these like evil algorithms at play that just feed you shit that you don't care about or that is just popular. And it's always going to be a push and pull with everything.
Feels like it's getting worse though.
I don't know. I mean, like, I don't know. Just
What's it feel like to you?
Keeping on this with is my Spotify, last question. Though, it's like,
in general, the entire sphere, what's it feel like? You could say it feels good.
I don't know. I have a hard time figuring out, like, oh, this is good, this is bad. But it's definitely, like, what I will say is that it feels less interesting. It feels, especially New York locally, feels, like, very sleepy right now. There's not a lot of, like, breakthrough, amazing, like, artists that, like, haven't gotten some kind of, like, decent publication written about them, or they haven't gotten playlisted on like some bullshit thing that apparently makes it popular or whatever.
I don't think that exists anymore.
What is that?
I don't think that exists anymore. I think that's gone.
The playlisting or the
No, the having somebody write about you and then it gets popular.
Oh yeah. Well, I think it still happens, but it is clear that publishers are having a really hard time monetizing all the dollars that were going into, you know, funding publications, advertising are now being funneled through Facebook and Instagram. And there's just all these publishers that are like, where the fuck is the money that we used to be getting like a decade ago? And it's not anywhere to be seen. And that is definitely a problem, because then Spotify is going to become like the main source of everything, which it practically already is. It's like, yeah, it takes money away from the people that supposedly really care and are like diehard about music and culture and that are journalists, which is problematic.
Gary, how are you feeling about this?
Good.
Do you agree, Gary? Do you disagree?
Oh man, I don't know.
You want to come up here, play
Gary,
some music?
Gary's trying to be neutral on this, but
Rick, thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. Gary, you want to come up and play some music?
Yeah. There we go. Thanks. I'm real good in the spot, you know?
In this guy, if you can. Oh. Check, check, check. La 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 la. Yeah, it's good.
Have taken the garden and sprouted. Now we're reaching that fine line. Daydream beauty are wrestling on the roof of your house. House, 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 house. Just don't forget that house, 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 house. House, 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 house. Thank you. over a highway mile just to get to you. There's no sidewalks or firesides here in this neighborhood. My sister, my brother, I think I want another. When all you really do is talking, pal, that's right, I'm talking about having heart pain. How long can this life of fear just carry on? I'm taking all my beatings, Italian restaurants, guardian angel, Japanese sailor. I think you really do talk too much. That's right, I'm leaving the conversation. Highway mile, highway mile, highway mile, highway mile, highway mile, highway mile. Escape from the taste with no hint of my misery. Golden California, TV with no volume. And if I overstay my welcome by law, a deal in heaven's gonna cover that clause. Drying out onto the outer banks. Transmission's gone, the fuel's run out. You haven't checked the brakes, but you're on your own when you finally fell in place. Still holds on you. singing happy birthday to a relative. One last ride on the catwalk until the signal fades. I know I can be weary, it happens all the time. It's just what happens when the mirror breaks. You got to school on time. You lost your independence on that day. I'm not leaving, but I'm not gonna stay. Another bill you racked up with a wrecking ball. The crew's coming for the camera, the group photo op. You're making him real nervous. You're meeting the baselines. One more fault and the crew comes back. Collect on the interest file. Return to the problem stored at home. Expired fruit and the freezer's barely cold. I'm not leaving, but I'm not coming home. So you take for granted the gratuity. It can't hurt a generation to be dignified. But who are they to judge? There's no hapless plan. I just played the evidence. Interference with a one-armed man. Did you put your soul back up for sale? I'm not leaving, but I'm breaking promises. Sleeping dogs under bridges and diamond rings. I think of sleeping dogs under bridges and human suffering. We're going up and up and over the wall, reaching down under the counter for the gun. The teller was just 21 and he told me his name. I said, John, let's leave this Astro plane. We're going down, 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 down through the law. We're going down, 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 down through the law. We're going down, 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 down through the law. We're going down, 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 down through the law.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's my last song. It's called Angel Night.
Let the fire burn tonight. Let the fire burn tonight. Around you. Down. sleep all day, angel of night. Well, inside eyes are lies, hides. Ooh, but with you, I'm alright, I'm alright.
Thank you.